Good evening, veterans of all ages and people on active duty. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, health is a major aspect of all our lives. We're always looking to get medical care and everything else. The medical care we get sometimes depend upon our doctors and our access to medical care. One part, however, that we can take an active role in is looking at our own diet, nutrition, and sleep habits. It gets real scary, but all of us have encountered individuals that are overweight, obese, or whatever. They're eating too much or not having enough activity or whatever happens, and that pushes all kinds of stress on the body. The other part that happens we have to be concerned with is adequate sleep. I mean, there's no doubt at all, and from experience and everything else and all the literature, it indicates we need to have at least 8 to 9 hours of sleep per night, because we have to go through the various sleep cycles in order for the brain to repair itself and be ready for the next day. So today and on this show, let's have a discussion about nutrition and diet and exercise and sleep. Denise, are you with us?
I sure am, and I'm so glad to be with you today to talk about all the announcements we have and to update you on that and talk about the problems we're having.
Yeah, there's so many of them. I mean, when we look at it, you mentioned this earlier, and you and I are preparing for the show, that we had another individual that got into trouble because of his diet, nutrition, and health habits, unfortunately, and that happens too often, doesn't it?
It sure does. Doug, let's take a minute and remind people that the Research Advisory Committee, VA Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Illness Research, occurs on September the 29th in D.C. at VA headquarters. We really need our veterans to show up, our spouses, bring your children if they've had health problems. You have time for a public comment. We're going to have busy time if we have more vets, but it's really important. You get to meet some of these researchers. You get to meet people that are representing us, whether we like it or not. But anyway, I want to remind people this advisory committee was set up by law because the Gulf War vets pushed to have it done because we knew we had problems with VA research because they were funding only stress research and not considering our exposures and the health problems. So we fought to get this bill. It was actually a law that was passed in 2000. There was two bills that passed that year on Gulf War. We had a delay in getting it enacted because they sent it over to the Justice Department to see if the laws conflicted with each other, which they did not. So the Justice Department said there's no conflict, enforce both of them. So we finally got the RAC committee set up in 2002. We have had dedicated people in the past be on these committees. Mr. Jim Benz, the chairman that was replaced by Dr. Heiliser, was a Vietnam vet, a vet that served proudly in Vietnam, served somewhere in, long time ago, you know, somewhere in the DOD as a civilian. Then he had also had time in his early life, I think, on the Hill. And then he went in and got his law degree. He then was a private business person that worked with scientists and other people to develop the first ultrasound. So he made very good use of his time, his knowledge, and came out to support us and was there at the CDC conference in 99 that you were at, Doug.
Yeah, we were there with that 99 CDC conference. That produced that report that we did on the research things and everything else. And I remember Colonel, now our angel, Colonel Andres Carnegie Both, Dr. Both, and Dr. Colonel Herb Smith and other ones, they spoke up at that time loud and clear of all the problems and what needed to be done. But again, it was shut down. And then I think what's critical out of the whole RAC committee is that 2008 report just justified and reinforced everything we had been saying from 1990 up until 2008, and yet that report has been virtually hidden or squashed, and yet it's the key to the medical care and research and everything else, isn't it?
Yeah, and I want to tell people, Google, VA, and then RACGWIR. All their reports are there. All the minutes and presentations are there. That is a source everybody should be using heavily. These people and the researchers that we got involved, Leah Still, Dr. Klimas, Dr. Galam, are some of the leading people that were involved with chronic fatigue, and even Dr. Klimas started with AIDS work, okay? They came out strong for us early on and have been doing things in the background kind of until we got the momentum to have the RAC, to have the DOD CDMRP funding where they could get funded and start moving things along. Now, it's a slow process. It's not fast enough for any of us. And I am not a government employee in any shape or form. I stepped forward because I was a nurse officer and realized the problems early on. You stepped forward because you had a lot more info, Doug, and we talked early on and got together. So I have been after getting the veterans treated right, and being a nurse, I speak out for healthcare a lot. And I recommend the research programs that I find that are finding things for us, recommend people get involved, get to them, be a participant in it. And
I think when we were at the CDC in 99, I know I was on prevention as a preventive medical officer, and then you were right there in treatment area. So we had all of that covered, along with some really incredible folks that were there, too.
Right. I want to mention one research that is not open for them to call you back and go through their criteria. Every research project has to have strict rules, which means conditions that they have to exclude and, you know, items that are included as far as reviewing your health. But Dr. Baronic has gotten funding up at Georgetown to do a large study on the MRI with diffusion tensor. Now, he did the first one that was published, a couple of years back now. 31 of us had our testing done. And we had some controls, which were normal people. All 31 of the Gulf War vets with trouble showed up abnormal in the white brain matter. And we talked about that study when it came out, Doug. But he is getting funding, and people can call in and leave a message that they want to be called back and want to be involved in this research. So you call in, give them your name, that you're a Gulf War veteran, okay, and leave them your phone number and your email contact. As soon as they're ready to start taking people, they're going to call you. You'll be the first on the list to start getting a phone call back and go through, you know, phone survey kind of, it's a, you know, over the phone, and the survey is basically if you have conditions that might prevent you from being in the study. So you can also email them. Now I'm going to give the phone number twice. And I'm going to give the email, okay? The phone number to call them, give them your name, your email, your phone number is 202-687-8231. That's 202-687-8231. One more time, 202-687-8231. Their email.
Please, can you, write up a summary of all these phone numbers,
sure,
and everything that people need so we can put it in the archives for
right,
Warrior Connection?
Okay, the email is all in caps, and it's gwiresearch@georgetown.edu. That's gwiresearch@georgetown.edu, and all the letters are in caps. So that is a study that I went through. In fact, I recruited Dr. Baronic. I do a lot of reading in the research journals for medicine and found his study on spinal proteomics on chronic fatigue and was so impressed with that. I got in touch with him and got him involved, got him invited to the RAC meeting. And then we, you know, he got funded for a CDMRP study. So he is a diligent. He is so good, Doug. I can't say enough about him. Every vet that goes learns more about their condition. I mean, he spends so much time, I don't know when he sleeps. I really don't. I worry about him. But anyway, it's going to be open again. Those that saw the study and wanted to get in and it was already done have another chance. So get up there and get your phone calls in. I want to remember Ewing Marietta, one of our Gulf War vets with the 24th Infantry Division, who died, and what was it, Monday morning, age of 48. And reason we're going to talk about weight today is because I've lost too many Gulf War vets, and as a Gulf War nurse that was specialty in cardiovascular, that was my love, was cardiovascular nursing and medicine. And I look at pictures on Facebook of our Gulf War vets, and a lot of them have their photos, and they'll have a photo of themselves when they served, and then they have some recent photos of themselves. To put it frankly, I've been horrified. And when I met early on in 94, that a UN person, his weight has ballooned up. I've lost too many to early age cardiacs. I've lost too many to pulmonary emboli. You know, I was co-author of a research paper on hypercoagulation. It all feeds in together, Doug. And Ewing was doing everything he can to help himself, to help others. And he had a heart attack. Now, he had been sick, not feeling well, since, you know, the Wednesday before. He had gone and become a minister. He had had reunions for his group in February and May from the Gulf War unit he served with that lost people of friendly fire. He was encouraging his other soldiers to get involved in the research. The only thing is sometimes we forget to take care of ourselves. His weight had gone up, I think it was close to 400 pounds. I met him at the program at Annapolis. I'm glad he was trying to help himself and help others and get him in. But I talked to him. I said, did you have an EKG done? Okay. Has the VA done an EKG? He said, yeah, they told me it was okay. People, you need to get a copy of your EKG. When they run it, you get a copy. You follow up with a Freedom of Information release and get a copy of it in your records, okay? You get that copy in your hand, and you look at it and see if it, you know, their interpretation says normal or if there's some strange things. The other thing is if you are at an increased weight, okay, you need to have an EKG annually. You need to be monitoring your pulse and blood pressure. I would recommend a diary that you do it yourself. And if you're at the VA and you ask your doctor, they will issue you the simple machine that will do the blood pressure and pulse. And you can do it once a day and record it and then record your other pain symptoms, your symptoms, other things that happen and do a daily log, like a diary, okay? You need to be proactive in your care. You need to ask for cardiology consult. And I mean it, guys. If you're overweight, you ask to see a cardiologist that you want to get checked out and you want to start, you know, trying to work your weight down. But you need to be checked out first. It means you should have a stress test done. That's when they put you on the treadmill and have you hooked up to the EKG. That's minimal. Okay, Ewing, I asked him if he had had a stress test. He didn't know what I was talking about. I told him he needed to have that done. Okay, a body mass index, a BMI measurement, body mass index. That's where they're showing how much of your body is fat versus muscle. Okay, and that can be done by the VA. You can get a C-reactive protein. That's a very basic lab work. It shows if there's inflammation present in your body. Now, if it comes out high, they should be doing consults, not only cardiovascular, but internal medicine, rheumatology, to see why your CRP is high.
Hey, Denise.
We've shown that to be one of the things, and that's C Denise? Reactive protein. Okay? Basic lab work.
Hey, Denise, one thing we're talking about, body mass index, okay?
Uh-huh.
So individuals can calculate this. If you take your weight in pounds and multiply that times 703 and then divide that by your height twice, then you'll come up with your body mass index. For example, okay, 150 pounds, 155 pounds times 68, and then divided by, times 703 divided by 68, divided by 68, and then I come up with the body mass index right around 23.5. And when you can look at, once you've got your body mass index, it lets you know where you're at. If you're under 18.5, then you're underweight. If you're between 18.5 and 25, your weight is fine. If you're 25 to 30, then you begin to overweight, and 30 or higher, then you're starting into real weight release problems and obese. So again, the real simple thing on this body mass index is do that calculation and find out where you're at. So again, you take your weight in pounds, multiply it times 703, and then divide it by your height in inches, again, and then divide it by your height in inches a second time. And that'll come out with a body mass index, and it'll be anywhere from, I mean, could be from 15, who knows where they are if you're severely underweight, on up to over 30 if you're obese.
Let's repeat that formula one more time, Doug.
Okay, you take your weight in pounds, multiply by 703, then divide it by your height in inches. That'll give you an answer. And then divide that by your height in inches again. And that will give you your body mass index. Now, once they get the body mass index, then you can start determining what your nutritional needs are and your nutritional requirements are. And also the same thing, again, as you just mentioned, Denise, that gets into the cardiovascular and the respiration stuff really, really critical, doesn't it?
Right. That's the other study, is if you have, if you're overweight, BMI is up, your chronic reactive protein, CRP, is up. You want to have enzyme checks, and enzymes not only check for your heart muscle damage, but it will check your liver, and you'll need kidney function too. Those are basic lab work, okay? Nothing special, basic lab work. If your enzymes are elevated, that's another key, you know, that says you've got problems. Now, people, you may not be medical, but with our advent in the technology age, you can go online, Google anything. Get copies of your lab work. If it says it's above normal, you should get online, pull up that lab test. There's plenty of sites to read about each lab test, and see what they say about it. Maybe medication caused, could be a lot of reasons, okay? But you need to educate yourself, okay? You are the patient. It is your life. So you have to take some responsibility here, especially in our system with our VA problems that we're having. I know most of the VA hospitals right now are understaffed. We've had a VA crisis. I know a lot of doctors have been let go. They're trying to rehire good doctors. But right now, veterans, you're at high risk, many factors going on, and we're trying to give you good education, good guidance. But the responsibility always starts with you. If you have a spouse, you know, get them involved to help you. You know, work together as a team. Be concerned about their health, too. The other thing is you need to get a sleep study. If you are overweight and your BMI is high, you're probably going to have sleep study. You're going to have sleep difficulties because it interferes with the normal airway passages being open. Your weight affects that. Okay, so you need to get a sleep study. And if they show obstructive airway, you are at high risk. We're not waking up from a, you know, if you do get to sleep at night, if you're not issued a CPAP, that's continuous positive pressure, you know, that you just a machine. And if you get a sleep study and that's a problem, you need to follow up to, you know, appropriate care for that.
You know, Denise, when we talk about sleep,
have been exposed to a lot of toxins. Doug, we've talked about it for decades now. And they need to also have their respiratory situation checked out, okay, proactively. We're having cancer show up. They're not presumptive conditions yet. But we need to push the VA and push ourselves to be proactive, to know what we should be needing and to keep up with it.
Now, one of the things, Denise, I think, let's go to sleep for a moment. I mean, if you don't get adequate sleep as it builds up, you start developing what's called sleep debt. And it's just like, you know, being in debt with spending too much money. And all this stuff adds up, and it doesn't turn into a very good situation. There's a set of questions that you need to ask yourself, and I'm reading this off of literature again, that you need to ask yourself when you're looking with sleep. First question, do you need an alarm clock to wake up on time? Next question, do you have a hard time getting out of bed or hit the snooze button to get more sleep? Do you find yourself nodding off during a boring meeting or while watching TV or while driving a car? Boy, how many people have we had lost sleep and lost control of the car or the motorcycle, Denise? Way too many, isn't there?
And then died as
yeah, they
a result
did.
Of one car accident or multi-car accidents or motorcycle accidents. Yes, that has happened. We had increased accidental deaths, car accidents, and I'm sure they're still there, but that was one of the things we noticed in the mid-90s that was elevated, was accidental deaths.
Okay, here's the next one. Do you fall asleep after eating heavy meals or after drinking small amounts of alcohol? Do you fall asleep within 5 minutes of getting into bed? Do you look forward to the weekend so you can catch up on your sleep? Do you need a nap to get through the day? Are you lacking physical stamina? Well, again, that comes from physical exercise and your diet and nutrition and everything comes together, and also all your medical conditions. Is it hard to concentrate? Do you have to slow down to do things correctly and accurately? And do you usually forget what you did in the last few seconds? I mean, all of those are indications of inadequate sleep, obviously. And if the person doesn't get enough sleep and the brain can't go through the various stages of sleep, it can't recover or anything like this. And I don't know. It just seems to me, I know when I start don't feel good or if I don't get adequate sleep, the next day, you know that you can't function. And one of the things that's happened, we've had reporting and it's cited here in the literature, especially when you're driving a car or during the middle of the day, your body at certain times in the day, like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's a normal nap cycle, I mean, since you were an infant or a baby. And then the middle of the night is also sleep time. So, I mean, Denise, what if you run across or ran into where individuals have different work schedules? I mean, some people work 7 to 3, other people work 3 to 11, other people have that 11 to 7 shift. How does that all affect your health and your sleep functions and everything else?
Well, you actually, if you do that, nurses and doctors that do that, are you there? Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. You actually kind of change your sleep cycle and your body adjusts, just like it does when you time change, when you travel and time change or fly at altitude and go long distances. It takes a while to adjust, and that all affects you too. Doug, I wanted to mention that extreme weight loss had one of our Desert Storm vets on it. I've been trying to get in touch with him. He was living up in Maryland, right? The little town next door to where my daughter has reestablished herself for her new job. And he was on extreme weight loss. It was season 5, episode 9, John Robinson. And he served, I think he was a medic over there. I'm trying to get in touch with him to come on the program with us. He was extremely overweight, and he wrote to Extreme Weight Loss. He was a medic there, and I think he became a nurse. He's at the VADC, was his job that was quoted, in the TV program on it. So I'm trying to contact him. He also, there was something about he had had pulmonary emboli. But the man has lost the weight. He had the skin surgery, removed the excess skin. It is amazing. It can be done. Now, I haven't talked to him to see where he was at, you know, in theater, if he had any other symptoms. And I will pursue getting him to get on our program with us. But it's amazing. I kind of picked up the local paper that they only get twice a week in the little town, and I read an article about it. I had gotten emails because I get all the, I've signed up for all the emails you can get from VA, from all the different VA hospitals, and they had had it as one of their things that they were promoting people to watch. So I knew about it. I didn't get to see the show when it happened. And, you know, grabbed the newspaper, and here it was, somebody local, close to where she lives when I was up there. And it's kind of like I grabbed the newspaper and brought it home with me. And all of a sudden, we lose one of the vets that I just met that I was very concerned about. This isn't the first time, Doug. You know I've lost a lot of vets through the years. And yeah, nurses, we have to kind of get a thick skin and, you know, have some kind of wall there to keep going. But it's hard. It is hard. And it's hard being a Gulf War vet and dealing with this and, you know, losing people. That wall comes down occasionally and it gets very, very hard. And that's why I wanted to focus on weight today and on our Gulf War vets, because you know, when I brought it up to others, they go, well, they're taking pain meds, they're sitting in their recliners, you know, they're not eating healthy, you know, it's their fault. Well, yes and no. You know, yes and no. We do have problems, but we have to find a way to do the best things we can. And that's why I wanted to speak out. When I've mentioned it before, you know, it's blamed on the vet. And, you know, taking the pain meds and not trying to exercise. And people, we've got to keep moving. If you have to go up to the swimming pool and just get in a swimming pool and move around, that helps to decrease the effort to be in a pool if you can tolerate chlorinated water. Some of us can't tolerate that. The other thing is, you know, if you're up and awake and you haven't slept, you know, and dawn's coming, you know, and the light's coming up. You know, it's cooler right now in the early morning, late in the evening. Walk up and down your street. Just start walking slowly and building up slowly. You know, the VA can help. You can get some nutritional counseling. They will refer you to, you know, nutrition and do consult with you for that. Get with a YMCA if you're, you know, able. If you're retired military, 100%. See if you live close to a base. Use the gym facilities. Start slow. Start your goals slow. But before you do all that, I want you checked out thoroughly. The cardiac is important. Checking out and having a good thorough physical.
Well, I think when the cardiac workup, the other thing to do is what we need to have everybody ask to do is make sure they get a pulmonary function test.
And all that before I, you know, to make a plan to start losing weight. Losing weight is stressful, okay, but it can be done even for us. And I'm tired of losing people to early cardiac. And some of that's going to happen, but if you're overweight and you're not doing anything about it, you're at the highest risk ever. He was 48 years old. I've had earlier deaths than that from our Gulf War vets. We have hypercoagulation. People go on Gulf War Illnesses Facebook page. I have two files in the file section on hypercoagulation. Yes, we have problems, and we need to be educating ourselves. And I caution people, yeah, seems like we run in cycles, and now we're going into the cycle of repeating all the things we've known in the past, Doug, that you and I have been there for, getting information out on the exposures.
Hey, Denise,
you know,
why don't
we can get mad at the government, we can work on that, but what really counts is our health, our health care. You know? If you're
Denise,
not alive, you're not going to be able to help other folks. You're not going to be able to be effective and talk to your elected senators and reps. By the way, they're still home. They're not back up in D.C. yet, so you got a little bit more time to try to get to them in your home state. I could call out many names of vets that died too early in life. And, you know, we've got to stay on top of them at the VA, but people, if you're not getting the care from the VA, I hate to say it, go to a civilian doctor. Worry about the money later. You know, you're going to have a bill. You know, tell them you want to pay them a little bit at a time, but, you know, tell them that you've been going to the VA and the problems. And, you know, be seen. If you're not feeling good, please, people, don't get online and leave messages on Facebook of this is happening to me, what should I do, and taking advice from non-medical people. Now, I'm a retired nurse, and I have to be careful. I was a nurse. I had legal liability. I'm retired now. I'm not keeping my license current right now. But I'm trying to guide you, and I'm trying to say if you're not feeling good, okay, please get into the ER. Please don't wait. You ain't wasn't feeling good. I don't think you went to the ER. I don't think you went and saw a doctor. And we might have been able to save him. And I think it would have probably been, you know, very high possibility that if he'd gone to the ER and gotten an EKG, you know, some other lab work, it would have alerted them to problems. Because I think he started complaining, wasn't feeling well around Wednesday. Around Wednesday, people, and he died, I think, Monday morning. But that's too long to wait. Too long
hey, Denise,
to wait, people. You cannot do that. Doug, you want to say some words?
Yeah, I think let's come back into some more of this stuff. I mean, you know, as you're mentioning, I mean, we lost Master Sergeant Charles Buckner, who was another member of our original team. And during Desert Storm, Master Sergeant Buckner at that time was up there doing the POW work, and he was another member of Rollo and Mine's original team going back to the 70s. But again, he came down with brain cancer, and they found it, and he was gone within 3 to 4 weeks. And then we lost another one also to brain cancer, who was a brother of another good friend, and all both of these just happened in the last few days. I think
Doug,
when we go back to the dietary stuff,
we
I mean,
also
you know,
need to talk about risk factors in your family, and not only if you're a Gulf War vet, but if you're also a Vietnam vet, if you were also in Europe during Chernobyl, okay, if you were on some of the contaminated base sites, you know, we need a new risk factor chart to be drawn up for vets is what I'm saying, because we have many, many bases that were contaminated. Camp Lejeune, McClellan's the next one on the list to get them help. You know, so many bases on the contaminated list. So many places that vets traveled, not only Gulf War, but Vietnam, the exposures they had, what they did as a job, you know, being a fuels handler, you know, that subjected them to having exposures to fuels. I mean, we really need to draw up a more inclusive risk factor chart.
I'm not sure how we, you know, there's so many. I mean, with the number of installations that are contaminated and the lack of concern by the military, I mean, a conversation I've had with the senior environmental scientist at the Corps of Engineers recently, the government and the military doesn't have the money. They don't have the real desire or willingness to look at it because the sheer number of casualties. We're looking at the majority of the casualties from Desert Storm, now OIF, OEF, and we know from Vietnam, were not from enemy fire. They were from just historically all of the medical problems associated with it and all the toxic exposures. And I think people need to understand how bad preventive medicine really was and continues to be. I mean, you've been fighting that whole issue. I know it was key to all of the conferences we've had.
Yeah.
And how do you get people to take concern? And when we lost these two right here, Chuck and Pat, again after church the other day, because I made the announcement of their deaths in church, because I had lectern duty this weekend. And then a couple came up afterwards, and they're going, what can we do? We didn't know. We had no idea. And it's kind of like the information's out there, but the awareness is scary. And more even frightening, this is where you and I have been working on and you've dedicated your life to, is until the individual crashes and burns, he doesn't want to come for help. I mean, how do you get that attitude to change? How do you get the people to change and realize how dangerous all this is?
Oh, well, we've been working it for years and decades now, Doug, and all we can do is keep getting the word out. The information on the exposures, I guess it's good to put it out because people didn't know they weren't internet connected back when the internet started and when we came home, and a lot of them didn't get a computer until later. And we've been out there with websites and everything trying to educate our Gulf War vets and Vietnam vets. You know, it took them years. It took them until 91 to get their bill for Agent Orange. 91, when we were over in the Gulf, they finally got action. And we have to talk about government denials and why. This is a huge cost factor for veterans. Huge. And it's huge economically for our government. It impacts the VA system. It impacts the economics of our country. But not only for our country, but for the coalition forces in the Gulf War. Also for the local population over there. I kind of wonder at times of why they're going so crazy over there, ISIS and everything else. Have they been exposed to so much that they're just angry? And that's what we see in our election right now is anger. And we need to really pull back, think about things, and be very cognizant of all this. An issue that I wish we could get as much talk as on climate control. Okay, climate control is big. Environmental factors are huge. I sit back and watch this and go, what else can we do? We can get the word out there. We can talk about health factors. We can tell our Gulf War vets, don't delay going to the ER. Don't sit there on Facebook and say, I'm feeling lousy, I'm having chest pain, I'm having shortness of breath. You know, you have to take responsibility for your medical care. I was very big into patient education. My thesis was on patient education way back when we first started cardiac surgery.
That's what you did for your bachelor's thesis?
We had beginning points for education with heart attacks, but we weren't really doing very well on when we had cardiac surgeries, preparing and rehab and all that. We've done a lot in that area. A lot has been done medically. More high-level testing has been done in the last, over 40 years now, 45 years since I went into nursing. So the advances are there, but you know, each individual person has to educate themselves to be taking care of themselves and their family. And, you know, I get comments online of, what, you expect us to read the doctor's notes and the progress notes and look at lab work? Yes, I do. Sad to say, doctors are overloaded with patients, and you're going to have to put your needs as a priority and get educated and informed.
One of the, Denise, I think if I remember correctly, and this is one of the most frightening things about all this, Dr. Bill Baumswager and both Andres Carnegie Bau, two incredible physicians and scientists and carer and everything else, they came up with the idea and made this proposition, and I think they were right on. All the chemicals and all this stuff we have in our daily life and everything for convenience and everything, this better living through chemistry, has led to a medical catastrophe. Because we're seeing the toxic exposure. So when we look at Desert Storm, we have all these complex toxic exposures in a very short period of time, to an extremely healthy cohort group, and then they went down and crashed and burned. And when we look at the long-term low-level exposures in the general population from these same exposures, we're seeing the same medical effects.
Right.
And when Bill and Andres came up with this idea, I know they were mad in Blue Blazes at CDC at that time, and they were mad in Blue Blazes at NIH also, because, I mean, what they were proposing was the fact that we got to go back and look at our entire lifestyle. So we got our diet, we got the materials we use, all the toxic exposures, the cleaning compounds, the stuff we use in industry and agriculture, all these things that we're adding to the food, the food additives. I mean, this can't be good. I mean, wasn't there some basic, when you went through your basic nursing, did they talk about this at all, or is this all brand new?
Doug, basic nursing, you learn your anatomy and physiology. You go into different, learning different systems of the body. It's, you know, it's pretty basic still. There's a lot more to learn now than there was when I went through. And medical schools have not really, you know, one of the things chronic fatigue groups are trying to get is get things in the curriculum of medical schools to open the door to looking at some of these invisible illnesses type thing that are affecting us, and to get funding to look at that in research and then getting it into medical literature and into the medical school curriculum, okay? It wasn't there when I went through. It was not there, Doug. When I came back, you know, I'd read on Agent Orange. I had, you know, a brother that served in Vietnam. I had a brother that has died from Camp Lejeune. You know, I was at least curious enough to start looking at that and the atomic vets and World War One vet history. You know, it's a shame. The VA could be a leader in this field, okay, instead of the denial, okay? But the other thing that's happened with the VA is that we've opened the door to all veterans. You know, the categories now are pretty wide open, and that's good and bad, okay? We get so much of an inflow now, you know, they open the door to other lower categories that they are overloaded with patients, and they were not trained medically on environmental toxins. Occupational health is a specialty all of its own. We've had the environmental health group come up. Those doctors have gotten educated with, you know, Dr. Ray, Dr. Johnson in Dallas, and all the ones they've tried to train. You know, each doctor is trying. They have annual meetings now of that group. They have certification programs of that group. We have the integrative medicine that's gotten into the area, and I will tell two stories. Number one, when I went to one of the meetings, and I went out to eat with a group of younger doctors, and I asked them, I said, what got you into what is normally referred to as a fringe group in medicine? you know, no one wants to pay attention to it. And it always came down to a relative or a friend. And your typical checklist didn't work. You know, you could do the checklist to get them through the crises and to start examining them closer. But there was nothing there in the beginning to treat people with, you know, exposures. Now, detoxification that we talked about last week and we'll talk about again, there's been detox programs out there. Environmental medicine has used some of that with the saunas, the Myers formula. You know, there's been that work. And Dr. Ray is a beautiful person that looked at, you know, what was happening, you know, allergies occurring because your autoimmune system gets involved. But it wasn't there in the beginning. When I came back and started realizing we were in trouble sitting, kind of coincided with, I ended up having some students at a community hospital, okay? I've been, you know, taking students into VA and big hospitals and small hospitals. And then I had finished with my students, and then I ended up kind of taking over for another nurse instructor for, you know, like nursing assistant, because she developed cancer and needed to get into treatment, and she needed somebody to fill in. And I knew the hospital and the staff, and I took over her job. So it wasn't as taxing at a lower level. And I was talking to the patients, and I noticed on one floor that there was this patient, and they typified it as a problem patient that just had complaints out the kazoo. She was being written off. Okay? When I talked to her, now I realized she was a chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and this was back in, what, 93, roughly.
Hey, Denise, you got to speak up louder. We're losing you.
Yeah, I you know, identified a problem, and I started looking around when I got home on the Internet, and that's when I developed a rapport with the chronic fatigue groups, the civilian groups that were suffering and had been suffering longer than we had. Okay? They were out there years before in the 80s, maybe even before that. And it just wasn't being taken seriously. So they have been battling alongside of us and the Lyme group with Lyme disease, you know, looking at that as a factor, looking at, you know, different drugs that can cause problems. There's building more awareness, but like I said, they're not trained in nursing or in medicine. Curriculum doesn't get to that point unless they go and specialize in occupational health or something like that. And like Dr. Ray started, he started bringing in doctors that were coming to his meetings, and he'd bring them down to his environmental center in Dallas for 6 weeks, and they had meetings of the doctors. I know you sat in on some of those, so did I. And he was teaching them and, you know, giving them the information that they didn't have, and then having them in the clinic and learning from the patients and from him. And, you know, he would keep them there like 6 weeks out of their own practice. Many of them went back to their locations and started using those principles and developing their own clinics. Okay, so it's been a slow progress, and it needs more. It needs more attention. And, you know, I look at what's going on right now. There's a lot of anger in our country, a lot of anger. And I worry right now because the anger is overtaking reasonable, knowledgeable thought pattern.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Let's come back to some of the dietary for a moment. Can we, Denise?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, one of the things when we look at dietary guidelines, okay, adequate nutrients and everything within your caloric needs. Now, remember, 1 pound is 3,000 calories. So however the work you do it, if you take in 6,000 calories of work a day, 6,000 calories in the diet, and you do 3,000 calories of work, you're going to gain 1 pound. If you take do 6,000 calories of work and only take in 3,000 calories, you're going to lose 1 pound. It's real simple. There's no management there. No miracles, no magic, it's strictly weight management. The physical activity levels are critical. If you're being sedentary, you don't need as many calories and much stuff coming in, but if you're going to be real active, it's got to go up. When we look at all the food groups, I mean, say look at about a 3,000 calorie per day diet, and that's for an active soldier and you're active and doing things. Yeah, 3,000, 4,000 calories is not a surprise at all, but if you're not doing anything, you might be down to 1,500 or 2,000 or 1,200 calories. You got to have all your fruits. I mean, making sure you got your fruit plates and all the stuff in your vegetables, eat a variety of fruit, choose fresh, frozen, and canned, you know, fresh and frozen, canned or dried fruit, you know, the whole thing. Vegetables, again, you got to eat a lot of vegetables. You got all your different types of vegetables. You got your green, your orange vegetables, and everything else. You got all your grains, you got to have those in your diet. Protein foods, really critical. And then obviously all the dairy. I mean, fats are one of those things that are critical. The body needs all these fats and saturated fats and all this other stuff. This is how we start set up metabolism. Carbohydrates, I mean, you've got to get really good fruits and vegetables and whole grains with the carbohydrates. Now, one of the things everybody runs into, and I know you keep talking about doing your blood work, your blood sugar, the amount of salt you have, your potassium, all this stuff, this is critical, isn't it, for body function?
Yeah, exactly, and vitamins. Vitamins are really critical, and it is just so much more critical with the gut forefeds. I think we're depleted on a lot of the vitamins. And I've got to tell people, you got to get off the fast foods. They're not good for you, okay? It's fruits and vegetables first. You know, fill yourself up with fruits and vegetables. Then fishes, white meat, turkey, pork, chicken, okay? Ground meat, pork, some pork is good. But, you know, you've got to get your fishes in. The fishes have a lot of omega, value to them, the omega oils that are so important. So, fish, get out there. You know, if you need activity and you got a stream close by, maybe take up fishing. Blend it in that way. I know a lot of veteran groups have reached out to veterans to take them off on fishing trips, and organize things like that. But I can't tell you, the people up in Annapolis were, wanting to know how much fruits, how much vegetables,
It's critical. The other thing, too, and I guess we keep coming onto this, and I mean, for me, it's a critical portion, is alcohol consumption. I mean, alcohol just doesn't work. I mean, with all the medical problems associated, cardiovascular problems, dietary problems, neuromuscular problems, consumption of alcohol is just kind of ruled out. I mean, much less all of the problems associated with the medications everybody's had. Very few medications allow you to take alcohol with them. I mean, just simply, alcohol is contraindicated whenever you're taking medications. You're having all these cardiovascular, neuromuscular problems, isn't it?
It's definitely, yes, definitely.
How do we get
wine,
people to break
the only
that?
Thing that I've seen anything good of is red wine because of the red grapes. And that's the only thing I've seen even touched upon in medical literature and research is red wine. You know, not a whole lot of it, but occasionally it's good. But the beers, the alcohol, empty calories, doesn't help, interacts with so many other drugs. Okay? That's the other thing. Besides, there are sites for lab work that you can read about. There are sites like drugs.com. And if you put in a search drug interaction charts, there are charts that you need to have a list of your medications, everything, prescribed, over-the-counter, even supplements, all that. There are interaction charts to put all that in, okay? Hopefully your pharmacist, some of them are very good. But there are charts now available easily to get to on the Internet. Okay, drugs.com is the starting place, and check all that. The other thing that's available now, at really reduced cost, they have the little things you wear like a watch. You don't have to get the eye watch. They have and have had for several years now one that monitors your weight, your blood pressure, your pulse, and it records it. You can download it onto the Internet and track your own progress, okay? A whole lot of apps for that now, that you can tie into with the Internet. So I wanted to mention using those tools to help you to track yourself. And, people, there's obesity in our country with the adolescents. I started seeing this problem with our gut war vets early. Now, we have metabolism problems from the exposures. And I've either seen those have gotten extremely overweight very quickly, Or I've seen the reverse of the wasting. And I was talking to one right before this phone call to do the show, of one that, you know, I've seen it happen. I worry about him. I go, you need to get a gut physical. You need to get with internal medicine. You need to review your lab work. There may be something there. Because a symptom of cancer is weight loss. Okay? So, you know, I see a lot of two extremes. And this isn't normal for our military people that were trained, that were healthy. And we saw it before. Doug, think about it. How many Vietnam vets did you see that developed the, you know, belly if they were drinking? We called it a beer belly, okay?
I guess there's just too many of that. I mean, I guess I made the conscious choice a long time ago to quit drinking, and I know with all the medical problems associated with stuff and the exposures, I know the fact that I don't drink. And the other thing, too, and I know for you, Denise, this has been a tight role to do it, is nicotine via cigarettes and cigars and pipes. That just doesn't function at all well with the cardiovascular problems they have, does it?
No, it doesn't. And Dr. Bonswagger, I need to call him and see if we can get him on the show. He's still out there in California.
That guy's incredible. I remember when we were doing the stuff, IOM and all that stuff, and up at the White House Council, when he was showing them how to do medical exams and everything.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that thing with the incredible Air Force pilot we had and everything else when Bill did the medical exam on him and then did the medical exam on other vets that hadn't been the same thing. And the White House doctors were freaking out, realizing, oh, my God, this is a real, real problem. Well, we're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll continue with education. Denise, thank you. Let's keep going with education and Progressive Radio Network, Warrior Connection, education, information, and stuff to help you get by with. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening.